I'm an addict named Ron. And I'm going to read the speaker portion. I believe it's from the information pamphlet number 2. The group, the NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there's not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we're here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. I'm an addict named Ron. I'm here by God's grace and God's mercy, and on the invitation of the Capital Area Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, it's my pleasure to be asked to come and talk about myself, because that's what I'm going to do. We're talking about the 10th step tonight and the 10th tradition. That's my portion. And Larry P. is going to talk about the 11th step and 11th tradition. That's his portion. I will try to be equitable with the time. All right. Let me tell you what, I've done enough of this to know that sometimes the person who's up here before you, frankly, is oblivious to the fucking fact that you even here. All right? You got to get up and do a microwave. All right? You know, you like O.J. Simpson running through the terminal for Hertz. All right? You know, now you got to be old to remember that. All right? I know Harold S. remembered, or don't you sit over there fronting, all right? We continue to take personal inventory, right? Not your inventory. Check it out. I take mine, personal inventory, and when we're wrong, or I can personalize it, when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. Most of the time, check it out, most of the time, my admission of being wrong is not to you. It's an admission that I need to do something different. Because what I'm doing, what I'm currently involved in, is not working for me in terms of recovery. All right? So I need to look at myself almost all the time. Because check it out, I have an illness. I have an illness. Now, I'll say it so I can hear it and own it. And I'm not just going to talk about I got the disease of addiction. I have an illness. All right. An illness that, wait a minute, that expresses itself in curious ways. Odd ways. You know, my disease has a cloaking device. Now you see it, now you don't. So with the 10th step, I often have to find, check it out, I have to find a way to remove the cloaking device. I have to find a way to access my denial. Denial is not just about drugs. Denial is about who I am. Addicts live secret lives. Secret lives. All right? I don't want you to know who I am. Wait a minute. Just because I'm 17 years and chump change clean doesn't mean I want you to know completely who I am. Shit, there are parts of me that I'm not comfortable with. And until I get comfortable with them, you ain't gonna know about them. That No, man, you better pray that somebody come before you and tell you the truth. All right? Let me tell you what. You're going to grow some other kind of ears when somebody come and always tell you. Always tell you that everything is always okay. The question is, then why the fuck are you here? God damn, man. I shot dope for 25 years. That's a quarter of a century. That's one drug. That don't have nothing to do with what I call starter drugs, or which ain't some people's starter drugs. Just check it out. The wine, the weed, the LSD, the psilocybin, the mescaline, the wine, my nasal inhalers, the carbonyl cleaning fluid. Ah! Come on, man. Wait a minute. Anything where I didn't have to deal with the reality of who I was. It's me. For some reason, there's a, check it out, an abject, deep uncomfortability with Ron H. It's gotten better, but it hasn't gone away. It hasn't gone away at all. Like my defects of character. Check it out, the lethal defects, because now there's lethal defects and non-lethal defects, right? The lethal defects are under arrest, but I still got defects. Anyway, I need to keep an eye on what I call my full moon. All right? So something I've been looking at. By that I mean, I watch a lot of movies growing up. I'm 58 years old, so I'm from the day of the black and white movies. Black and white movies. Get off that light. Come up from Delaware and putting us in the dark. I need to be able to identify my full moon, because check it out. I have the sign of the pentagram. You say, what the fuck is that? It's a figurative statement. The pentagram. There's something, check it out. There's something that happens and I transform. It was a movie. It starred Lon Chaney. He was in a movie called The Wolfman. See, Lon Chaney had been, check it out, tell me if you can relate. He had been bitten. Wait a minute. Have you been bitten? Were you bitten? Tell yourself. That's what we said. Tell yourself after every meeting. I'm asking you now. Tell yourself. Have you been bitten? Your ass has been bitten. You claim addict status, you've been bitten. You claim addict status, you got the sign of the pentagram. In the movie, Lon Chaney was Lawrence Talbot. Lawrence Talbot, he had been bitten. He went to the gypsy woman, Maria Hunsbanyaya. You see, Maria Hunsbanyaya was a more experienced member. She had a son who had been bitten. He had the sign of the pentagram. And he said to her what we say to each other. He said, check it out. Something like what you said when you said, hold my money. Hold my money. No matter what I say to you. No matter what I say, don't give me the money. Don't give it to me. Larry Talbot, he said to the gypsy woman, he said, lock me up. Lock me up no matter what you hear. I don't care what the sounds are. Don't let me out. Because my moon is out. We have a moon. And the moon tells me to take a look so I can check it out, check it out. In the 17 years I've been clean, there's a certain moon that repeatedly comes back. Maybe every 7 years. Every 8 years. Don't think for a minute because, check it out, because you worked with it, you got it down pat, you got the shit arrested 7 or 8 years ago, that you're done with it. Oh no, this is a disease. There's something inside of me, wait a minute, that cries for failure. There's something inside of me that feels like I don't deserve to succeed. Doesn't matter. Clean time doesn't matter when it comes to this. So I need to have a way to tell when my moon is coming out so I can take the necessary steps to not transform into the wolf man. I need to be able to face myself. We continue to take personal inventory. I took inventory. In the fourth step, I took inventory, right? We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. In the basic text, it says, the longer we live our program, the more God puts us in position where issues surface. That means the longer we live our program, that means after the fourth step, as I'm going through life, right? And then stuff comes up that I haven't had and ever had an opportunity to address. It's, for some of us, it's rehabilitation. For some of us, it's just plain old habilitation. Habilitation is a learning process. Rehabilitation is a relearning process. Some of us never learned in the first place. Come on, Ron. So we take a look at ourselves. I'm taking a look at me because I'm trying not to fuck you up. We do damage. Oh, goddamn, man. We do damage. We fuck up the lives of our children, the lives of our wives, the lives of our husbands, the lives of our friends. Wait a minute. Check it out. I ain't hurt nobody. God damn it. I ain't hurt shit. I just used. Well, your mother was up night after night after night. Night after night after night. Wait a minute. Sometimes she became so overly concerned about your ass that she would leave the house and ride in the car looking for you. Check it out. Deeply concerned. She would go up in the crack house. Have you seen my boy? Have you seen my girl? Have you gone in the shooting gallery? Just this morning on the news. Just this morning, they had a video camcorder thing of this guy punching this 100-year-old woman in the face in New York City. She was on a walker. He had to be one of us. Listen, I'm a psychotherapist in private practice. I work with mental health. People with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depressive disorder, dysthymia, they don't walk up to 100-year-old men and punch them in the fucking face. Addicts do. Crackheads, dope fiends will do anything for $2. 33 cents. So I live my program and issues come up. I'm constantly challenged in my life. I mean, I'm challenged. I'm challenged by my response to things. I'm challenged by how, check it out, there's two things. How I want to respond, and then there's how I should respond. Should is based on what it says in the seventh step in the basic text. It says we gradually, check it out, and carefully pull ourselves out of the loneliness and isolation of addiction and into the mainstream of life. It's my defects of character that foster and create, check it out, antisocial behavior. Antisocial behavior is not always robbing Central Jersey Bank and Trust Company. Antisocial behavior is helping, check it out, your mother loses $500 in the house. Don't nobody live there but you and her. You see your mother crying, you say, what's wrong? You know what's wrong. It's in your fucking pocket. It's in your pocket. And she say, she know that her answer is falling on the right ears, but she says, I lost $500. And you know what we do. We say, I'll help you look for it. That is the kind of behavior that separates us from society. It separates us. It's our defects of character that separate us from society. We are not supposed to be separated from society. We are supposed to be a part of society. But for some reason, we didn't like the feeling of the path that was laid out for us. I don't like what this feels like. For some of you, that means being gay, being lesbian, being bisexual, transgender. For some of you, that means being black. Oh, there's some emotional pain attached to being African American. You know, if in this country, if you're old enough and not living in denial, there's pain attached to being Jewish. You wouldn't know that if you're not Jewish. My point is, what is it that I'm uncomfortable with? What is it that I'm having a problem living with? And try to find a way to reconcile myself with it. So I use defects of character to check it out, to overcompensate. To try to make myself feel better. Why do we use? Nobody, and if you claim addict status, nobody uses for the fuck of it. Why use this for the fuck of it? No. You take other people, wait a minute, earth people, right? Normal people, whatever, if there's such a thing as normal. Because they fucked up too. All right, yeah, oh yeah, some of the most selfish people in the world. Never use drugs at all. All right. But why is it that when they, check it out, when they're in the hospital and the doctor has them on, check it out, all Percocet and Oxycontin and Hydrocodone and Vicodin, why is it that they say to the doctor, doctor, how much longer do I have to be on this? I don't like it. There are people that don't like it. You and I, we press the button. Thank you. something different. We use because it makes us feel better. So why is it that I don't feel good when I'm not using? Wait a minute. I medicated whatever it was for 33 years. Then I come in from Narcotics Anonymous and y'all talk total abstinence to me. You don't, this ain't a moderation program. You know, I ain't got anybody who can, check it out, moderately smoke cocaine. You know, yeah, you can just have one rock, all right? I don't think so, all right? So we come in here and you talk abstinence. Abstinence really translates into that you're telling me to be off of my medication. Off my medication. Heroin was a Schedule I drug. Schedule I simply means that there's no medical use for it. But there's a medical use for methadone, Schedule II drug. It's the same shit, man. Schedule II, Oxycontin. Schedule II, Hydrocodone. Schedule II, Percocet. Schedule II, Vicodin. Schedule II, Demerol. All right? It's the same shit. Those are called medications when they're Schedule II. Schedule I drugs aren't. Marijuana is a Schedule I drug. Because there's no medical use for it. Medical marijuana, check out, brace yourself. It's coming. Brace yourself. We'll have to deal with it the same way that those of us in recovery have to deal with benzodiazepines like Valium and Xanax. Anyway. So I find myself with check it out, without anything external to medicate myself. It is perfectly normal and logical. Doesn't mean you have to do it. For the new member to want to run around fucking everybody. Sex is medication. I mean, sex, I don't care if you gay, straight, bisexual, sex is medication. Sex makes people feel better. Check it out. Even if you're doing it by yourself. It works. You ever been in prison long enough, you know. It works. I'm trying to go somewhere with the 10th step. I'm trying not to wreck what I've developed, all right? I'm trying to not destroy anything. Ours is a threefold disease of body, mind, and spirit, all right? We wreck relationships, and I'm not just intimate ones. We wreck relationships, jobs, families, all right? We just destroy relationships. This 10th step is going to help me to prevent me from, destroying anybody, all right? It's going to help me to stop if I was burying my mother, to pull her foot out of the grave. Because people, I was talking about our mothers chasing us around, all right? Sometimes our fathers chasing us around. And I use the term matricide. I was in prison for 15 years. I was never in prison with anybody who killed their mother by worrying her to death. But we do. We worry people. They get ulcers. They get hypertension. Concerned about us. All right. My mother said to me, she used to call me Ronnie. That was my criminal name. Please don't call me that. Because it creates counter-transference. All right? I don't want to have that experience. All right? But she said, Ronnie, you do so well in prison. This is my sponsor here. Check it out, he's codependent. No, he's not. He's doing his job, man. Billy over there. Mama said, you do so good in prison. So good. You do so well. President, 501c3 nonprofit organization, certified by the Secretary of State, 3 telephones, 13 outside volunteers, 7 social service programs. Wait a minute. Come out of prison. Use. Don't know what else to do but use. No interventions, because I didn't have any interventions. Never learned any interventions. The 10th step is about setting up interventions between me and the old behavior coming back. I need an intervention. I need to have some tools. Wait a minute. The 4th step is about checking out, doing this searching and fearless moral inventory to take a look at who I am and the damage I've done, the people I've done, the places I've done, right? And the 10th step, check it out, the 10th step is like being a homeowner, right? With the 10th step, right, it's about, wait a minute, when the plumbing goes bad, fix the goddamn plumbing. Don't neglect the plumbing. When the electricity goes bad, fix the electricity. Huh? When the roof has a leak, fix the roof. Because if you don't fix the plumbing, you don't tighten the electricity up, and you don't fix the fucking roof, you'll be doing another 4th step. All over again. The 10th step is about repairing and patching stuff up, tightening stuff up. You check it out. Wait a minute. It says in the basic text, we learn that we are growing when we make new mistakes. Instead of repeating the same old mistakes. Don't come into recovery thinking you're not going to make any mistakes. Those mistakes is how we learn. What we want to do is damage control. Keep the damage to a minimum. So that we can fix it. We can help to make it right. The damage that we do in here most of the time is not to each other. But we do. Have the humility to put somebody on your 8th step. Wait a minute, but it doesn't mean anything if you do it again next month, next week, because the people are going to say, come on, man, you're the boy who cried wolf. You're Milli Vanilli. Give me a break. I'm going to go to the text. I don't need to be afraid. This 10th step is have me looking at myself. Check it out. Dragging my 3rd step with me. Dragging it with me. The 3rd step, in its most simplistic term for me, is just doing something I don't want to do. Going against my will. If I don't go against my will, I ain't turning shit over. I'm just doing what I always did. I'm talking about a 3rd step, but I really ain't. I'm not practicing a 3rd step. 3rd step is that I need to do some things that I haven't done, things that I haven't been willing to do before. Just do them, all right? That means honest share is the antidote to my disease thinking. Tell somebody what it is I'm trying to work on. Talk to somebody about your goddamn dreams. Talk about your dream, if you can dream. Because the dreams only come in the 5th stage of sleep. The REM sleep, rapid eye movement. And because of defects of character and the lack of step work, a lot of us don't get to the 5th step of sleep. We stay in nightmares. The first 4 stages of sleep, nightmares, where you got that fucking restless leg syndrome shit going on. It's the truth. It's the truth. Tell somebody about your dreams, because the minute you tell them about your dreams, if they got 2 ounces of sense, they're going to ask you, what are you doing about it? Because at the end of the 5th step, check it out. At the end of the 5th step, the question in the 6th step is that, at the end of the 5th step is that, God damn it, I don't like who I am. I don't know anybody who came out of a 5th step Like they were at a dance or an affair where they were happy. All right, I don't know them. Maybe so, but the ones I met say, man, I need to get this shit up off my ass. I need to get this up off me. Wait a minute. So the 6th step really asks, if you don't like who you are, what are you willing to do about it? All right, and say we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Right, entirely ready to have God do that. Right, check this out. God, right? God ain't gonna come in and just do something for me that I can do for myself. God's not going to do that. Go check it out. God, if I'm going to invite God in, I need to do some things that check it out, that would give God a message that I want him in my life. The sixth step tells me, wait, we come here powerless. Recovery and relapse. We come here powerless, and the power that we seek comes to us through other people in Narcotics Anonymous. That's where the power comes from. But we must reach out for it. You got to be humble enough to go to somebody and say, man, I need your help. You got to be humble enough to go and say, listen, this is what I'm working on. It doesn't feel good. Check it out. Own it. It doesn't feel good for me to tell you this. I don't like this part of me. It's a liberating feeling to get one stone, one rock off my back. Because now that I tell somebody what it is I'm working on and where I want to go, they're going to ask me, how am I doing with that? How am I doing with that? You know, the seventh step is about, it's an emergency step. It ain't a step, we just use it for the fuck of it. It's an emergency step. We say we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Right? Check it out. I've done all that I can do. I can't do anymore. I've told on myself. I've changed some behavior. I've arrested some things. But there's something that I keep doing. I just keep doing it. I don't like it because I learned from the previous experience. I learned from the sixth step that I can have a better life if I can stop. But I can't stop. But I learned that if I can stop, I have a better life. But I can't stop. But I want to stop. But I can't stop. But I want to stop. And I can't stop. I want to can't. What can't? I can't do. God, please help me. Help me. Wait a minute. Because if I don't do that, I'll never have a fucking 11th step. I won't have it. Because the 11th step says we sought through prayer and meditation. Wait a minute. To improve our conscious contact with God as we understand him. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us. In the paradigm of the cat out. You can't improve some shit you don't hold. You can't improve something you don't have. How you gonna go get a, how you gonna get a home improvement loan and you don't own a fucking home? I thought about that when I was using. I was watching TV. I said, oh, what's that guy, the Linden Tree or some shit? Something that was about home, second mortgages, right? With second mortgage without a first mortgage. Check it out. Improve a conscious contact without a conscious contact. Won't happen. Will not happen. All right. I got my contact in the seventh step when God did for me what, check it out. There's some things you can't do for me. And it'd be nice to have God in your life. Oh, God, universe, wait. I'm talking, when I say God, don't get it twisted. I'm talking about in our third, fifth, sixth, seventh, 11th, and second tradition. I'm not anywhere outside of that. That's all I'm talking about. We can change the language. You better be connected to the universe, the great spirit, a higher power, God. But check it. It better be something other than yourself. All right? And at some point, it has to be something other than the person sitting to your left and your right. Because there's one thing in life that's promised. Only one thing that's promised. And that's death. That's death. Existential psychotherapy concerns itself with four things. All right? Four things. Meaninglessness. What is my life about and who am I? Meaninglessness. Freedom. Isolation. And death. Those are the existential psychotherapists say those are the concerns of human beings. When you die, or you're on your way, it's going to be you
in God. Do you want your suffering to be less? Do you want to suffer less? Because listen, suffering is a part of life. Some people never want to suffer. That's us. I want a one-size-fits-all feeling. I want to feel the same every day. Every day. You know? Just increase the heroin. All right? Just increase the heroin. That's what I was doing. That's exactly what I was doing. You know? I didn't want to deal with me. I didn't want to feel what I was feeling. I didn't want to deal with reality. You know? So I get my feet back on the path. And I start going somewhere that it talks about in the 10th step, and it works out and why it says we see ourselves. You can't see this in the 5th step. Oh, no. You can't see it in the 7th step. Mm-mm. God often works through those who care enough about recovery to show us our shortcomings. Wait a minute. My gratitude speaks when I care and when I share. Check it out. Listen to the language. With others. Narcotics is not foolish. If they wanted to say my gratitude speaks when I care and when I share with addicts, they would say that. They don't say that. They say it with others, the NA way. That means that we assume a leadership situation in our community. We become leaders. Wait a minute, the 12 steps says having, and it's going to be done tonight, having had a spiritual awakening. As a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and practice these principles in all our affairs. Wait a minute, all of our affairs. The first half is carrying the message to addicts. The second half is not. The second half is about all of our affairs. And since we're not on some island just with addicts, you know, I talked to Shakur last week. He was coming from the Cape Atlantic Convention. And he said he was going over somewhere near Norristown. I said, damn, man, you coming from Atlantic City, you going to Norris? He said, hey, man, I'm going to support my daughter's basketball stuff. Wait a minute. There's some of us that say, man, she can go do that shit by herself. I need to make a meeting. Sometimes the biggest meetings in the world are with regular people, carrying the message to regular people. So we're glad we see ourselves as we really are, accepting our good qualities along with our defects, knowing we can change with the help of a higher power. Check it out. We are becoming what we were meant to be all along. Whole human beings. Not just fragmented and fractured people. But whole human beings. Complete. I got to get ready to shut it down. I'm going to tell you this about the TEP tradition. The TEP tradition says that NA has no opinion on outside issues. All right? Our primary purpose. Check it out. We only got one. One primary purpose. That's it. Not two or three. One primary purpose, and that is to carry the message, all right, to the addict who still suffers. So now we're going to connect the dots. What is the message, right? That any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life. That's a trilogy. That's a trilogy, a story in three parts. The message is hope, and the promise is freedom. So we don't bring in the Republicans and the Democrats. We don't bring in the Shiites, you know, and the Hanafis, all right? We don't bring in Christianity versus Islam versus being Jewish. We don't deal with that, which is also why we don't, check it out, we don't come in here, we shouldn't come in here, but we do, all right? Talking about the Bible, the Holy Quran, and different, the Torah, all right? It separates people. You go some places and they close with the Lord's Prayer. Don't do that. You're going to have people that ain't going to do that. You know? Ain't going to do that. So, I mean, it's not fair. Those are outside issues. We have no opinion on that. Don't bring it in here. Don't bring in the AA big book. Don't bring it to the meeting. Put it on the table as Bill sees it. And I'm not knocking AA. I'm not knocking AA. I'm simply talking about respect, because if you happen to go to an AA meeting, for any reason, could be your best friend celebrating. Ain't no law against not going. It's your goddamn friend celebrating some, check it out, some sobriety. Well, if you go, respect their traditions. Like we respect ours, like we want our traditions. That's all. And no program is better than the other. One is better for you than the other. I go to NA. That's exclusively. It's the only place I go. Because I have my identification here with you sick motherfuckers. And with that, I'm an addict named Ron. Thanks for listening.
Our next speaker will be Larry. He's going to share on the 11th step and 11th tradition.
Hey, man, that's the best clap y'all could give me? Damn. Y'all make it roll, man. Sick. All right. Yeah, man, I need a little conscious contact in here. Sick. Make me feel neglected, I say. You know what I mean? My name's Larry, and I'm an addict. Yeah. And that's a hard act to follow, man, but check this out. I got my own experience. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, July the 1st, 1990, I had an afro, I stunk, and I looked real bad. I ain't looked this good. You know what I mean? I had an afro, I ain't had no bald head, but I came to a meeting on Monday night, and that brother right there was sharing, man, and he was just a hollering and a spitting. So he was sharing all these numbers and his numbers in the jail that he had. And I said, one day, man, I want to be just like him. You know, one day I want to be able to carry the message to have me want to keep coming back to Narcotics Anonymous. And my day is here. You know, because I did what he told me to do. He said, go to a meeting, don't pick up. All of that good stuff, man. I mean, I've been blessed, man. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I had people talking about where they was at and where they was coming from and how they was trying to get to a new place. I'm talking about 11th step, man. I'm going to tell you something, man. I came in here with a hole in my soul. I didn't think that I had no relationship with God no more. I didn't have a relationship with nothing and nobody. So when I came in here, man, I came in and I got blessed because my predecessors, man, they was dropping it like it's hot. I'm talking about, they was talking about things that I just didn't know anybody would talk about. My first week in recovery, man, this lady, man, I love Barbara Egg, man. She out in Florida right now. You know, I share about her every time I speak. Because like when I came to my home group, we didn't recover at the time. I was there for 14 years. It was my first week. I remember my first week in recovery, man. Because like when I got there drunk that night, man, I came into the meeting, there was a whole bunch of white people, man. I was drunk, out of my mind. And that first meeting, I had a conscious contact with God. You know why I know that? It's because I didn't see the color, man. I just raised my hand and they gave me some hugs. They came up and they said, Larry, call me in the morning. I don't pick up and go to me. Just white people. I was prejudiced when I came in here, man. From the door, God took that shit away from me, man, because them people hugged me, man, and I know I stunk. They love me, man. I mean, there ain't no color up in here. Yeah, we look like you two's all fucked up. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, man. I just gotta lighten up a little bit. But when I got here, I got a conscious contact, man. I called Turkey in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I went to my first meeting, they said, go ask that guy to be your sponsor, man. And I'm sharing my experience, man, how like from the door, there was a God, man, touching on me. It was the people in there that showed me unconditional love, because the 11th step is all about the love that we learn to give ourselves and be able to give to another recovering addict. I'm talking about the loves I got my first 90 days, man. They told me, go ask that guy to be your sponsor. I ain't had time to look for no sponsor, man. I was fucked up. Drunk. I'm talking about I didn't have a pot to piss in, living in a house with everybody still getting high. I needed surgery immediately. Sponsor told me, man, the most profound thing I ever heard in my life, if you don't pick up, you can't get high. said meeting makers make it. I had no choice. I went to 2 to 3 meetings a day. Was unemployable, man. House getting high, man. I'm talking about I went to meetings, man. And then by going to meetings, the sponsor said to me, he said, he looked at me, then looked up at this guy, said, okay, I'll be your sponsor. He said, call me every day, man. It was messed up because this guy, man, he's like 6'3". His name is Dougie. You know, and like he looked up at the sky because he was from the same town I was from, Rahway, New Jersey. And in Rahway, New Jersey, I was the terror of the town. I used to get drunk, man. I used to start fights. I was like tore up. I was just a maniac. Once I get high, you didn't want to be around me, man. I'm talking about talk a lot of junk. Think I could fight. You know how you, if you get drunk, you know you could beat everybody? I got a thing with big guys. I always pick on big guys. It's just sick. And he was a tall guy. He happened to be one person I tried to pick on one night. But when he looked down at me and he said, yes, I'll call you, he said, call me. And let me tell you something about this sponsor, man. I got to talk about my conscious kind of got through the sponsorship, man, because it was that man that showed me how to live this thing called recovery. I'm talking about living this program, man. You can't have no conscious contact if you don't come in and start doing things right away. Newcomer, Jim, man, it's good to see you, baby. It's about the changes that we start right away. Listen to people share about how the conscious contact starts when you surrender to the fact that you got a disease called addiction. Our basic text tells us we surrender to the fact that we're an addict. I knew I was an addict, man. You have people that's all confused. I shot dope for 20 years. I got hepatitis C, colitis, man. I got marks all over my body. I knew I was an addict. But I didn't know that I thought I was a piece of shit, man. I did things all my life. I didn't think I deserved to be alive. This sponsor told me, man, he said, like, as long as you come to me, your life will change. He said, the solution to all your problems is in the steps. He said, all you got to do is work the steps. I read all 12 steps, and I had all the answers. If you read them, that's all you got to do, but it's not about that. It's about surrendering to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. The conscious contact means I had to start living the program. I had to start coming to me and start understanding it's about the changes that happen to you when you start practicing being honest with yourself. I had to accept that I didn't know anything about being a man. I was 35 years old. I was a little boy. I had 2 kids, man. I had both parents still getting high. Son was 7 years old, already robbing schools. He's in jail today. It hurts me to share that, man, but what I had the opportunity to do was show him what a real father is because I kept coming to meetings. I'm talking about I kept coming to meetings, and I wanted a chance. I went to the law office and said, these are my kids. I'll try to marry a woman that still had them. And I bought her a ring, and she sold me, and I had to leave her alone. I talked to her, I was going to marry this woman, had 6 other kids with other men, but recovery, man, I thought I could save her and bring her to the rooms. I thought I could save her for my kids, and it just didn't happen that way. I was with this woman for 18 years. He talked about how sex is aphrodisiac. This woman knew how to give me sex, and I was not going to let her go. I started working the second step, man, and I found that another person can't make you happy. They can only enhance the happiness in you. When I wanted to marry and she sold my ring, I had to leave her alone. Well, it wasn't until she sold my ring that I was able to be free. I could not save this woman. Right now, she's still getting high, man, 54 years old. And I prayed for her, man. She came in recovery for a little while, trying to get me back because I moved on. I don't never know what's going to come out of my mouth when I share. But I always talk about me and how the process of getting a constant contact with God worked for me. I follow the suggestions that people told me, man. I'm talking about I started surrendering to the simple fact that, like, I can't make somebody be with me. I was working on the third step, man. I surrendered my will to the care of God. And that meant that I couldn't try to fix my mind, control anybody because I surrendered the first step. And I understood that the principle in the step work in the first and second was I had to believe that it was nobody else that was going to help me change. It was me and the people that was encouraging me to keep on doing the things that's necessary to grow up and become a man. I'm talking about I started living the program by the step work. I got a process, man, of recovery that I'm going to share with y'all that's going to blow your mind. I'm talking about I came in here confused, man. You know, I came in here like thinking I was a pimp. You know how we come in here with our old great grandiose ideas of who we were. I lied to myself for a long time. I wasn't ever a pimp. I was a simp because I couldn't even hit the women. I realized a lot of shit when I came in and did my fourth step, man. I came in and started actually understanding that the process of recovery is me getting honest with who I really am. I started working 5 hours an hour. I'm nervous as hell, and I ain't never been this nervous. I'm nervous, man. I've been in this room a lot of times, but I don't know what it is, man. Maybe it's that pretty lady looking at me and shit. All right, I'm all right. I just had to smile a little bit. It ain't you, man. I just got loosened up a little bit, man. You know, I started to understand early in recovery, man, like my kids was going down the road, just fuck, they was just going to be dead. So I started being responsible real quick, man. I was one of them NA gurus, man. I used to go to meetings, man, talk about the people with more time than me because they wasn't living the program. You know, I was trying to do everything perfect, man. I went to meetings early. I stayed late, man. I started doing shit that I ain't never believed possible. I got a job, man, making $5 an hour. I stayed on that job for 16 years. I started with $5 an hour, man. I ended up going to the highest point I went, and like 4 months ago, I got laid off from that job because of my conscious contact with God, because that job is already outdated. I've outgrown it. I was scared to let it go, but God said it was enough, so they laid me off. But the process of recovery that I'm going to talk about, man, is how I started looking at myself. How I started understanding that the conscious contact with God started when I surrendered in the third step and made that decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understood him. You know, because by the time I got to the third step, I already had all the coincidences and everything happening to me in recovery let me know that I was in the right place. People was talking about all the shit that they had went through and got through in recovery. I started working, man, and I started getting money. I was making $5 and I had my own place for the first time in my life. I was doing all kind of shit that was unbelievable, man. I'm talking about going, I had a home group, man, reading recovery, man, was always about the steps. I went to so many meetings. One night, my sponsor said, yo, I had to call my sponsor, yo, y'all want me to work late. What do I do? He said, go to work. I had to miss a meeting. Because I'm one of them addicts that came in and was scared to stop going to meetings. I'm telling you my experience, man. I was scared because in the meetings I was safe. In the meetings, y'all was telling me I was somebody. You know, y'all was validating who I was. But when I left the meeting, man, like all I tried to do, man, is everything perfect. I wasn't who I was, who I am today. Because now I'm the Larry that I am. I mean, all my defects come out at any given time. But because of my conscious contact, I'm going to talk about fuck what I'm going to talk about. Let me just talk about it. But when I did my fourth step and started understanding, looking at who I really was and how I was behaving in life and society, because I'm not a funny guy. I'm really not. I'm a really serious person when it comes to recovery. When I started working this program and living the program, I started getting notoriety. I started going to speaking commitments. I started being on the circuit with people like Ron. In my 2 years clean, I was running around sharing the book, quoting the book, living the program according to the literature, not telling people how I was really living, not telling people how I was really feeling. And one day I woke up, man, and I found myself in a place where I don't never want to be. Isolated from the world because I don't want to get honest. I ain't never had this shit happen to my life. Y'all get a moment of silence for me, please. My 14-year-old daughter is outside. My third wife is outside. They wanted to come in this meeting. They wanted to hear me share. And I told them they couldn't come because I called my sponsor. And he said some things they don't need to hear. I've been doing a lot of speaking in my area and everywhere, and I've got to a point where I don't really want to say what's really on my mind. I got a conscious contact with God that's awesome, and all of a sudden I don't want to tell y'all of the glory and the grace that God has bestowed upon me. I don't want to tell y'all that by coming to recovery, man, I started looking at myself on a daily basis, and I started humbling myself to my God in my seventh step and started asking him to change me to be the man that he wants me to be. I started asking God to do things for me that I couldn't do for myself, and he's been doing it. I started stop trying to think that I'm a fly guy, trying to hit on all the women, man, and start being a man at home. You know, I talk about flirting with women all the time, and I ain't touching nothing just for today. God has changed me, man. In the seventh step, when I was living in the seventh step, I took my second daughter, my first daughter, into my home, and I started raising her. She was 13 years old. And I started obsessing and compulsing over wanting to have sex with my own daughter. I had to ask God to take that from me. I was speaking in all kind of places, asking God, please, sharing at meetings. I just don't want to touch my daughter. God took that from me, and I never touched my daughter. Now she's 21 years old, and she's living a life only because her father was there for her to try to help her become a woman. I took this girl into my house when she was 13. By the time she was 16, she started having sex, had abortion. But I was there. I reached out to the women. I asked God to help me with her. And she started growing up. And now she's a woman that works because her father went to work every day trying to support her. I didn't bring a whole bunch of women around, my daughters and my son and my new baby, because like I wanted to be of service to God. I changed. My whole life has changed because of my surrender in the seventh step. Because I asked God to keep on helping me be the man that he wants me to be. I'm talking about I've changed so much, man, but sometimes I can't believe where he has taken me. In our seventh step, it works how wise says God will do this who isn't far exceeds our own. What he wants for us, we can't even imagine. When I started asking him to help me in that area with my daughter, he blessed me with my next daughter that came to me when she was 14. This daughter that's 14 with me, let me share y'all with this with y'all. 2 years in recovery, my sister, 4 years, my sister, father, brother died. And I was married to this woman who was a nurse. You know, I mean, I was a fly-ass guy because she made more money to me. That's why I married her. And she made more money, and that was my motive for marrying her. Plus, she had a nice butt. I'm going to tell you, she had, you know, I'm not going to talk like I'm all of that gooey. It was just not this money. It was the sex, too. But she married me because she thought I could give her babies. I found that out because she was a nurse. She was confused, you know. And I, when my mother, my brother, sister, and father died, this woman took my little two-year-old girl who, like, when she came out, man, she stayed with me for her first year. I talk about this nurse couldn't even change this daughter's, this girl's diaper. I could. I'm talking about I was able to raise that child, man. But I'm going to go back to where God has changed me into understanding that sex and love ain't got nothing to do with each other. Because of these two little girls that God put in my life and my son, I understand what true love is. Because when I was raising this little, my second daughter who's 14 outside, when I was raising her, you know, like they took them, the courts took away. This woman tried to use my addiction against me to not have me see my child. But I would never stop showing up for my child. Now my daughter turned 14 this year, and she decided to come live with her father. And my father, because I'm in recovery and because I live in this program, I went from a bum asking for quarters on the bridge with rhinos to a homeowner. I went from not having nothing to being able to be sociably acceptable in the area, whereas the courts wouldn't even do nothing to me or my daughter because I'm a better parent than my daughter. Because I've been getting prepared in recovery for my daughter to be with me and me to be the father and the man that I'm supposed to be. My constant contact with God is one whereas I'm not focused on any of you. Come, I came in here and my fun was over. I was 35 years old. I did everything that I needed to do to understand that it wasn't about me no more. So when I made the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I knew that it was all about me trying to change and serve a power that gave me the opportunity to live two lives in one. I lived a life, man, of total hatred of myself. When I started coming in and started living the program and understanding it's not so much as what I do or say in recovery, it's what I do when I leave up out of recovery. Recovery in the conscious contact means that you don't start talking this program, you got to live this program. I'm going to tell y'all, man, let me tell you, when I really surrender to my God, and when I start really understanding what recovery is all about, we talk about it's an active change in ideas, attitude, and behavior. I told my sponsor up tonight, he said, man, tell the truth. You know, 11th step is all about how I started praying in the meetings. When we all prayed together, it started right then. You know, when I started understanding in the second step by me sitting in this meeting and everybody sharing, and I'm listening to everybody and I'm thinking about what I'm going to say, I can hear what God wants me to hear if I'm paying attention to it. My conscious contact started coming to me when I started really listening to what everybody shares. I mean, whether I like them or not, close your eyes when they share. Because the people that you won't want to listen to is the one that's going to help save your life. The conscious contact comes through the people. It ain't nothing mystical or magical. I've been understanding it as I keep coming. I go to meetings and I listen to everybody. Yeah, most of the time I like to share because I got to hear how the disease is not going to rob me of my freedom and where God wants to take me. I'm talking about my conscious contact let me know that everybody come through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous is there for the same reason I'm there, and I'm not there to judge them but try to support them and love them. I try to support everybody, but I know I'm coming there for me because this disease, it ain't no joke. I've lived this program to the point where as I know who I am today in a lot of areas. I know that I'm dangerous to myself and everybody else. He talked about the 10th step. I'm talking about I know because of these issues with sex and how God has changed me from that. How now I'm attracted to all of these women are now attracted to me, and I don't even want nothing for them except for them to get better. I ain't believe that this day would ever come, man. There's newcomers coming and looking all good, and I don't want nothing for them except for them to get better. The dog that I know I still could be. Because in 11 step conscious contact, when I see him and I start looking at him the way they ain't got no business, I said, God, please help me in the moment. A brother prayed with me up here and I don't even know who he is, but he told me it's about in the moment. And I want to thank him because it is in the moment, my conscious contact. I might have got stuck for a minute, but I know when I start talking about what God has done for me and my conscious contact with him, I'm going to let y'all know what this program is about. The 11th step is all about me trying to live by the principles of the integrity that I know that's in me because I've been practicing. Disease don't want me to press them or share them because they want me to stay stuck with the fact that like I don't belong here when I know I do. Constant contact with God means all I gotta do is get out of his way. Sometimes I wanna hold on to an image or like thinking somebody better than me or I can't share behind Ron H, man. He's too great. That's bullshit. Ron ain't nothing but another addict just like me. He fucked up too. He done told y'all about it, so I'll say it to him too. You know, I gotta feed myself and get with my constant contact shit. Fuck around, see Uzma. I can't talk fucking Uzma ain't nothing but another addict too. He talking about we no longer inferior or superior to nobody, man. And my constant contact is just like that. And all of a sudden, I'm going to get all scared and shaky. I'll be all fucked up. I got a sponsor. He said, man, you better have came through that shit. I'm looking at him now and shit. You know what I mean? But the reality is sometimes I still get scared. I'm still afraid. But I'm not afraid to tell you that I'm afraid. I'm an emotional, sensitive individual, man. And I know when I move out of God's way, he's going to do what he's going to do anyway. Disease of addiction, have me all locked and loaded and stupid. You know what I mean? Well, acting like I ain't got nothing to share about my conscious contact with God. Well, that's what all it's about for me is God. It's all about me asking God to help me in the moment. We talk about, we got a chapter just for the day, and it all talks about, the whole chapter talks about a relationship with God and asking God to help you all day long. And I've been doing that all through my recovery, practicing saying the serenity prayer. My wife told me today, say the serenity prayer, because she was getting on my fucking nerves. Say the serenity prayer, motherfucker. I said, you better start saying the serenity prayer. Motherfucker, boy, you be not, there'll be a number four. Motherfucker, you know, but you know, shit. Yeah, that's why she couldn't come in, because that shit was gonna come out, huh? Shit, all goddamn day long. Talk about, you better be lucky I got a conscious contact, because, like, I don't give a shit. Yours be gone. I could be okay with or without money, because I got a conscious contact. I ain't worried about whether or not, because I'm laid off, because I'll start my own business now anyway. I ain't afraid no more. I'm doing what I need to do, because, like, I came in here and understand that the only limits that I got is the ones I put on myself. Only reason why I couldn't share is because I'm putting limits on myself, putting another motherfucker before me. I'll be goddamn if that shit's gonna happen for long. Shit. That's bullshit, man. Everybody put their pants on like me. I don't know what the fuck was wrong with me, man. And I'm alright now. I'm gonna start, y'all see I'm getting a little bit loose and shit. Fuck. Fuck. I don't mean no harm, but fuck around each. Shit. Shit, I got a conscious contact, Dak. I'm gonna talk about the 11th step. Shit, I'm gonna be all Mickey Mouse like I'm a shy motherfucker all of a sudden. Ain't nothing shy about me, man. I bought me a 600 series today. I got a hobby. Conscious contact, man. Instead of me acting out on females, I go bowling. I try to do shit constructive. The process of recovery lets me know that my conscious contact with me is all about asking what do I need to do that's positive that when I always want to be is negative. I call my sponsor up because like, I was all messed up, man. I know what to do, man. My constant contact through the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. Ain't no big eyes or little U's up in here. We all sick as hell. You know, some of my defects, they just don't, I'm an arrogant obnoxious and all of a sudden I'm gonna be passive and submissive and shit. That ain't who the fuck I am. I don't, like, I got a head and an ego that's unbelievable. That's why the 10-step inventory is so important. I gotta monitor myself, man. I gotta monitor myself all the time. It says we welcome the exercise of prayer and meditation by the time we get this step. I welcome sitting still. God, help me. Don't let me move. You know, don't let me fuck this. I got this new business. This guy, I did a job with this guy. I learned a valuable lesson in business. Don't do anything unless it's on paper. I worked for this guy for 2 weeks. I hired somebody, bought a $1,200 machine, and I ain't get a dime. I'm paying my employee for 2 weeks, and then he fired me. And I still ain't been paid. My constant contact with God and it comes through my wife and my daughter. Chalk it up as a loss, Larry. I want to beat this old man's ass. I'm straight up, straight down. I want to tear out another, give him another asshole. But if my conscious contact says chalk it up as a loss, you know what I mean? I'll be relaxed and let it go. See, because when I see, I talk about how the conscious contact was in the here and now. How I'm talking, when I talked about my daughter and the incest and that stuff, the one that messed with her, I shared that because I had to let somebody know that men do change. My father molested my sisters. My father molested me, my brothers. He was fucked up and he had this disease. My constant contact with God allowed me to say, Daddy, I love you and understood him before he died. I'm talking about having a constant contact with God enabled me to have the courage to talk to my sister about the incest and the shit we did. Because of the conscious contact and the courage that I have, because the principles in the 11th step is all about the courage and the humility and the acceptance that's necessary for you to be obedient to the Spirit of God and do what you need to do when you're supposed to do it. I'm talking about a conscious contact. Don't be afraid to do the next right thing. Shit's uncomfortable. I don't like being nice all the time. He talk about punching somebody, but I want to punch somebody every goddamn day. Just for a second. Because then I know that that ain't where it's supposed to be. My sponsor shared with me, man. I don't really want to hit nobody. That's why I go to meetings and talk about it. Come in here and talk about what you're thinking about, and don't be ashamed of it, because there ain't nobody in here no different. Most of them think the same shit anyway. They just ain't got the courage to talk about it. A lot of fucking secret squirrels up in here. Don't want to talk about how they really feeling. I go to me and talk about how I want to cheat on my wife. No, she ain't need to be in this motherfucker. She don't know how close it's been for me just to say goodbye. And because the constant contact means I'm no longer living that illusion that that woman wasn't put in my life by God. After that woman that left me, divorced me, I wasn't never messing with none of you heifers ever again. I was going to service you now, trust and believe. Because I think I'm one of the best in the world that ever did that. I do it all kinds of ways. I make sure you tell me to keep coming back. Because if I don't hit it right, I'll lick it right. The conscious contact with God let me know just who I am. So I'm a legend in my own. I'm sorry I'm looking at you, but it's just them lips, man. You know, you got them lips and shit. Oh, man. Yo, man, I'm sorry, man, but damn, I just had a conscious contact with you and shit. You don't even know about it. Shit. I told you I'm getting a little loose. Yo, man. You know what I mean? Because I'm about having fun, man. I ain't about being morbid. See, and that's painful when you're going through shit in life on life terms. It's painful when you got to get uncomfortable to understand that it's not about the physical, it's about the spiritual. That's some painful stuff when you're so used to the physical. But the spiritual make me feel so much better. I'd rather laugh about it than do it. Because after I do that shit, I'm messed up for days. For days, man. Been there, done that, man. For a blowjob. It's a damn shame, man. We messed up for a month because I got a blowjob outside my marriage. That's fucked up. Conscious contact with God will not allow you to keep living the same way when you start practicing these principles. The courage to come in here and talk about whatever you're going through is what the conscious contact is all about. Sharing how, like, I ain't arrived nowhere. I'm just coming here and understanding that I got to pray prayer. God, please help me. Please don't allow me to act like that fool that I try to make myself out to be. My seventh step, please remove the shortcomings standing away of me being of service to you. I couldn't even speak up here tonight because I was so afraid that I wasn't going to measure up to somebody when I ain't got to never measure up to nobody but where my God wants me to be. I ain't never got to try to be anything except what God has already made me out to be. I understand my prayer from God when I just said for y'all to give me a moment of silence for me to get back to who the fuck I am. My constant contact is all about me living in the realm of just trying, like all outdoors, not to be the same messed up person that I always been. I know I got some integrity, man. I've been living this program for the last 16 years. Thank you. I know how to say 5 minutes. I ain't going to tell you no and keep going. But the 11th step, y'all heard what it is. It's not mystical or magical. It's about doing the next right thing. I got to also give you the information on the 11th tradition. And he talks about our public relation policies based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. That tradition is something that I know a lot about because I was in PI. I was PI chair for about 3 years in my area. I'm one of the best addicts in recovery. A grateful addict will never use and will always stay in service. I always want the doors of Narcotics Anonymous to be open. I always wanted to have the meeting to be there. I want people to know who and what we are, where we are, but how we're living. 11 steps say our public relations policy is talking about how we deal with the public. And I'm going to tell you now, don't think that it's all about just going out there on the news, telling the schools and stuff. But it's about how we live it, how we come in and change. How when you at a meeting, they tell you, don't go outside and make noise. They tell you not to disrupt shit. That's our public relations policy. Don't think that it's all about just going to the media. It's about you learning how to live the steps, not keep on acting like a damn fool. The public relations policy that it talks about in literature is like being able to let people know who we are with a group of people. Not no one person ever, ever represents Narcotics Anonymous. You don't have movie stars talk about NA because that's when we get all messed up. Because movie stars get high. They relapse. They get too much fucking money. And they be done. We got people, I know professional people up in, everybody's equal. a public relations policy based on attraction rather than promotion. I wanted to talk about, I had this opportunity to speak on a TV camera at the job that I worked. I'm glad I was in service. They wanted me to talk about my brother that had the virus in the place that I was working. But because I understand the tradition and what anonymity is all about, it wasn't my time to shine. It was my time to practice the principle of what true humility is and let them know that I can't talk about that. Because not only would I be burning my brother's anonymity, my whole family would have been blown anonymity. And but I'm not more than that. With Narcotics Anonymous, I ain't got the right to do that. Thank God I got a sponsor, man. Thank God I respect and love Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God I'm going to let you know when you stepping out of bounds, coming around, doing shit you ain't got no business doing. It's our responsibility to tell each other exactly when we're wrong, not to sit back and let people go on. Ain't no humility, ain't no conscious contact when you see somebody doing some shit that's all messed up and you don't say anything to them. Courage and our public relations policy have been coming upon us, letting each other know when we're messing up. Not telling them, letting somebody know, yo, man, you need to stop acting like you're a hoe. Conscious God, though, man, I can't get off of God right now, because when I get started with God, man, I'll be in it. 11th to 11th edition, man. I'm going to share this with you because you told me 5 minutes, and that's three. And the last 2 minutes I'm going to share on the public relations policy is, I got a clock in my head. Last what 2 minutes of public relations policy is, be an attraction, and don't never try to promote it, because all you got to do is stay clean. Thanks for letting me share.